This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
All right, Sharp Money, VSIN, the Sports Betting Network. We got you back. Got college football tonight. Got first pitch there in Minnesota coming up in just a bit. We are first five under. I'm full game under the eight, Sonny Gray, Javier. However, right now it's time for our boy, Brooks Austin, Fan Nation Director of Recruiting, Dogs Daily Lead Editor at Brooks Austin BA on Twitter. I encourage everybody to check out. Just go give him a follow on Twitter. His YouTube channel, The Film Guy Network. The way that these guys put the videos together, it really is impressive. Go give them some support. The Film Guy Network on Twitter. Brooks, we say hi. And let's start here. Mario Cristobal. What, dude? Oh. So we were supposed to have an ACC matchup, Miami of Florida at North Carolina. I'm not sure how good North Carolina is. They're undefeated right now, and they're laying 3.5. But yeah, let's just start kind of unraveling what happened with Cristobal.
Yeah, so it's like, I think it's first down. There's 38 seconds left on the clock or something like that. Bottom line, under 40 seconds on the game clock. Opposition has zero timeouts. Science, either football. Like, that's it. We remove all questionable doubt out of the football game. Need the ball. And I've been looking at it. Apparently, his offensive line coach was the only guy on the sideline that was, like, jumping up and down like, hey, what are we doing? It kind of goes by the wayside. They end up running the ball. Of course, they fumble. And here's the worst part. I don't know what's worse. The decision, the colossal mistake not to knee the football out, or somehow, some way, figuring out a way to give up 75 yards in four plays in 26 seconds when the opposition has zero timeout. It's like, what in the world? It's one of the biggest colossal losses in the history of college football. I mean, it is bad. And I know social media caught on to it and was like, hey, guess what? Cristobal also did this dumb stuff in 2018 at Oregon, but at least that one was, like, understandable. It was a minute and a half left. There was a second and three. There was like, hey, if we need the ball out all the time, we still have to punt it to them. They got to play 14 seconds. This was bad. This was as bad as it gets.
Guys, just to substantiate the point that Brooks made right there, in this game, coming into that sequence, the Georgia Tech Ramblin' Wreck had 76 yards passing. They wound up with 151 on the game. They had 175 yards up until that point, and they wind up with 250 for the game. Just incredible. I don't know how this Miami team recovers. Brooks, you're in the state of Georgia. You cover Georgia very closely. I want to ask you, for people that may not have watched that Georgia-Kentucky game closely, it was a thoroughly dominant performance. This was the first time all year Georgia looked like the number one team in the country. What was it that you saw out of Kirby's team that made them look so proficient and look like they could go for a three-peat now?
Yeah, I think the offense looked as confident as they possibly could and executed as highly, as efficiently as they possibly could, but this was a defensive-led football team. It has been for years, and we've been waiting around for Georgia's defense to come out and play like them. I think there's been a lot of talk nationally about, oh, Georgia's been starting slow. Georgia only had 17 first-quarter points in the first 5 weeks of the season. Georgia slow this. Georgia slow that. And they were pointing at the offense. Guys, the offense wasn't slow. The defense wasn't getting off the field. They gave up first-quarter possession touchdowns against UAB, South Carolina, and Auburn. Three offenses that shouldn't be scoring first quarter possession touchdowns against Georgia, this defense, right? So, like, once they started three and out in Kentucky really quickly, that's that football team that beat the hell out of Oregon to start the football game last year, right? That big monstrosity of a win they had in Mercedes-Benz last year against a ranked Oregon opponent. If you guys go back and look at that start of that football game, they got a punt early to start the football game against Oregon, and then the next two offensive possessions for the Ducks were pick, boom, next thing you know, you're down 21-0. Like, Georgia starts fast historically because the defense, three and outs, turnovers, oppositions, and that was the Georgia we saw again this weekend. They've been offensively great. Hell, they were – Carson Beck's was 14 for 18 on 3rd-and-7+ going into last weekend. They've been great offensively. They've just been needing to get teams off the field quickly.
Our boy Brooks Austin joins us here. Boys, USC stinks. Now, Brooks, it was late for you on the East Coast. I don't know, 2 o'clock in the morning, triple overtime against Arizona. They had every right to lose that freaking football game. My gosh, were they? But that defense is so bad, so bad. And here we go, USC.
Go chasing.
No, you love it, Notre Dame. And to be fair, the Pac-12 has been awesome this year. So I'm not clubbing the Pac-12. It's just USC. Let's talk about this. USC coming off a triple overtime win. Notre Dame coming off the loss there against a very fast and good Louisville team. Notre Dame laying 2.5. Who do you like in this matchup, Brooks?
Man, I really like Notre Dame because they can run the football, and they do it really, really well. I think they're like top five in the nation in explosive rates as a running the ball football team. Now, Sam Hartman had a really, really rough week last week, 3 interceptions, and just it's off to a really slow start. Their drive chart in the first half last week against Louisville make you want to throw up. It's just like, ugh, it might as well be turnovers. They're having such shorter possessions to start the football game. But hey, I think Arizona, give them some credit. The last 2 weeks, they've kind of put out a blueprint on how to slow some of these offenses down that are like historically great in Washington and USC. Last week against Washington, they only gave them 8 possessions. Now, unfortunately for Arizona, Washington managed to score on 7 of those. But like, hey, that's beside the point. They managed to make it a game because they managed offensively to keep it out of their hand. And then against USC this last week, they played what we call dollar defense, right? There's nickel, there's dime, and then there's dollars. Guys, they played 8 defensive backs for most of that football game against USC, and they kind of drove Caleb Williams crazy. So it'll be interesting to see what Notre Dame does this week based off what Arizona did last week. Sometimes when we see defenses give a blueprint, see a lot of teams try to copy it against these really explosive offenses. But I like Notre Dame in this football game because I'm a line of scrimmage guy. If I know you're a little bit better at the line of scrimmage, I'm going to bank on you.
Brooks, let's go to the showdown Saturday in Seattle between Oregon and Washington. Many people may not know this, but Oregon right now just dominant in their point differential against anybody in college football, plus 199 points, have been thoroughly dominant. How do you see this game between Knicks and Penix, which could lead one of these guys to New York City for the Heisman finalist?
Hey, that 81-7 drumming against Tittawatta Tech or whoever the hell it was probably helped out that scoring margin. I'm just going to say that right now.
You're not wrong.
But no, you're right. They have been extremely dominant. They are the only team other than Georgia, I believe, in the country that are in top 10 in scoring offense and top 10 in scoring defense. So Oregon is built a lot like Alabama, a lot like Georgia. They're going to walk out. They're going to try to play man coverage, right? They're going to try to cover you. They're not going to try to confuse you. They're going to try to beat you. And that'll be an interesting game plan to see if they continue to roll that out against a team like Washington, who, man, I've said it over and over again, with the combination between Michael Penix and that plethora of receiving core that they have, they remind me a lot of last year's Ohio State football team with C.J. Stroud just operating at an extremely efficient rate and teams being like, all right, well, if we're going to beat Washington today, we got to score 45. So that's the question. Can Bo Nix score 48 points? Against a Washington defense that, you know, might be able to turn him over. I think that's the key to me with Bo Nix. Like, we've seen the 73% completion percentage. We've seen this renaissance man of Bo Nix, this guy who's, like, completely revolutionized this game, what we saw at Auburn, this turnover-heavy guy. So now all of a sudden he's protecting the football and he's accurate. I don't know. I haven't seen a football team be actually able to make him throw into tight windows yet. We'll be interested to see if it happens this weekend.
Indiana's at Michigan, Big Ten, talking Brooks Austin here, talking a little college football. PJ Fleck said it's the best team he's seen in a long time. How good is Michigan? Michigan's laying 33.5. It's a big number with Indiana in town, but I want your take. How good is Michigan?
They remind me of 2022, 2021 Georgia. Like, they are physical. I think PJ Fleck said it best after the game. They traveled 75 guys against Minnesota. They played 73 of them. Like, that's absurd. They're deep, they're physical, and they're extremely well-coached. If you're going to run 73 football players onto the field, you got to have 73 guys prepared. Like, that is a really, really elite coaching staff. And it's funny. I think Jim Harbaugh's got one of the very unique advantages that nobody else in the sport has. His daggone brother's in Baltimore. And if you look at their staffs, they just kind of recycle guys. It's like, hey, this special teams coordinator is getting kind of stale. Oh, don't worry. We'll take them. You know what I mean? It's like they just pick up NFL guys and move them back and forth. They're extremely well coached. They've recruited at an exceptionally high rate. And J.J. McCarthy's elite. Now, my only question is, who's going to put them in a box? Who's going to be able to get in the ring and punch for Michigan this year? Because the moment it happens and they have to play a style of brand of football that they're not comfortable playing, then they kind of get beat. That's what we've seen the last couple of years. So I don't know if this is the weekend. In fact, I don't believe it's this weekend. But no, they've looked extremely dominant, particularly defensively, man. They are cutthroat.
Yep. Just to build upon that question, does it become a more of a challenge because their biggest games are in November? They get Penn State, Maryland, and then Ohio State. Does the fact that they play all these three teams 3 weeks in a row make it a different challenge than, let's say, the Buckeyes played Maryland now, they get Penn State next week, and then they get Michigan a month from now?
Pac-12 teams this year are looking at them like, hey, welcome to our strife the last 10 years of this conference. For some reason, the Pac-12 does what the Big Ten did to this team this year, where they stack the end of the conference schedule where it's like, all right, well, we just got to survive. And then in November, we're going to get punch drunk for 4 weeks. Like, that's what it looks like. But no, it is a very interesting way of stacking a schedule, and it's about surviving. But when you're a Big Ten football team, okay, you kind of know we're a three-game schedule. Whenever it shows up, we're a three-game schedule. Wherever those three games fall, we might get good luck. We might get good luck this year. We might have bad luck next year, unless you're Michigan and Ohio State, and you know you're playing at the end of the season, no matter what. So I think that's just the way it goes with Big Ten teams, just like with sometimes with SEC teams. It feels like every week, it's not this year. This year, they're down bad. But most of the time, it feels like SEC teams, it's like, God dang, we got another ranked team coming into our house this week. Or daggum, we got to go play a top 10 team again this week on the road. Not necessarily like that this week, but every conference has their struggle. The Big 12, it's like we can get beat. It's like any given Sunday out there. Everybody's either really good or really, really bad.
If you like college football, you have to follow Brooks Austin at Brooks Austin BA on Twitter, YouTube, the Film Guy Network. I promise you it's tremendous. And also, I counted three daggomits during the conversation. That's about as good as it gets. Daggomit. Thank you, Brooks.
No doubt.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Basketball season is ready to tip off, and the VSIN experts have been hard at work tracking the latest player moves to help you bet smarter. Become a VSIN Pro subscriber today and get our all-new NBA betting guide featuring up-to-date previews on all 30 teams, futures, and year-long player props. Best bets on player awards like Rookie of the Year, live betting strategies, plus strategy and advice on building your own NBA betting model from our senior NBA analyst, Jonathan Von Tobel. Give yourself an edge this season and get the VSIN NBA betting guide by becoming a VSIN Pro subscriber today. VSIN.com/subscribe. VSIN.com/subscribe. Okay, Tim Jenkins, our quarterback guru, coming up in about 14 minutes. We welcome you back here on Sharp Money. I want to go through, we're going to have a little fun. We're going to apply letter grades to the Pac-12 teams. It's kind of been a theme here on Sharp Money. The Pac-12 this year is the best conference in college football as we welcome you back. I'm Patrick Maher, of course, Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson. Do either of you have an update as we're underway there in Minnesota, game three with the Twinkies hosting the Astros?
Yeah, right now Houston's leading 1-0 in the top of the first, as you alluded to. They got runners at the corners and Jose Abreu at the plate right now. Michael Tucker gets a single the opposite way, scores Jose Altuve, who got on base, and then Yordan Alvarez with a double. So right now sitting with runners at first and third, just a single out for Sonny Gray, who's already thrown 16 pitches.
Not ideal for my man Sonny Gray. Yeah. Overcast Gray to start here, big guy.
Yeah, it's not good for when all three of us are on the under in some way.
A quick question for you guys, because I'm a big proponent of this, not because of what happened just now. Tucker's up. You got first base open. Tucker's had a phenomenal year. I think he had like 28, 29 bombs and a .112 driven in. How about put him on base? You've got one of the fastest humans of all time, Jose Abreu, coming to the plate. I mean, you talk about an opportunity for a tailor-made double play and get out of the inning with no runs. Why not take that chance? As Abreu just smacked a three-run bomb.
Oh, man.
Oh, my goodness. Really?
No doubt.
It was a second deck. Second deck.
That is a brutal start for the boys. I guess. Was it 4.5 on the first five?
Yeah. Hey, we're still alive.
-130.
We're like Sharp Money. We got a 9% chance.
You don't give up. Don't ever give up.
Real quick, I want to go to Patrick's play on the full game for a reason. Because, Patrick, this is generally one of the reasons why I play a full game. I'm telling you, this is a great opportunity to play the in-game. You'll probably see it 11.5, and it's a much higher total because you don't get beat by a single inning. So many times, the Diamondbacks scored 3 last night. It looks like the game's going to fly over 7.5. It doesn't even get there.
I love how my whole entire cap centered around Sonny Gray, who literally just threw up all over himself at home as he recorded an out.
He's got one out. Got a called strike three on Bregman.
All right, I don't want to disrespect Mr. Gray, but he has recorded an out. Okay, we'll keep you updated. 4-0 lead, top of the first. The Astros at the Twins, game three. We'll have plenty of updates throughout the show. Okay, let's get started here with the Pac-12, and we'll correlate, obviously, with their games coming up this weekend. And I'm going to start here. Cal's at Utah this weekend. And again, it's just a letter grade. So let's start with Utah. I think you have to grade them a bit on a curve because of the quarterback situation and Cam Rising. A loss to Oregon State, but they are 4-1. Amal, you want to start here with a letter grade on Utah thus far?
I'm going to give them a solid B. Injuries, obviously, Cam Rising. You look at the running back is drawn a blank on his name right now. JJ there in terms of his injuries. But to me, what they've been able to do without consistency and third string quarterback, a true freshman, I think Kyle Whittingham deserves a ton of credit in a very, very competitive league. UCLA's got a top 10 scoring defense.
Yeah, and a defensive slugfest. They beat UCLA. Yeah. They beat Florida. That was a big win. The one loss to Oregon State. Again, they've got Cal this weekend. They're hosting. It's laying 13.5. Big guy, you want to give your take, not necessarily just on Cal, Utah, but a letter grade on Utah?
It's just tough for Utah because we're going to look back and go, what could have been if Cam Rising was healthy? Just because, like, even without him, they've managed to, I mean, they're 4-0 heading into the Oregon State game, and they were in that game for a little bit there, and then it got away from them. I think B is the fair grade, but that's just because of Rising being hurt.
Yeah.
If this was the result with Rising healthy, it's probably a C plus.
Yep. I gave him a B as well. If you want to throw a grade at Cal, Wilcox, by the way, 5 of the Bears' final 6 games are against ranked opponents. So Wilcox may be on the way out, but sitting 3-3 right now.
I got to give them a B plus. This team should have beaten Auburn.
Yep.
This is a team that's been very competitive in games and didn't expect them to be. I've been impressed with what they've done. You know, Justin Wilcox must be the most likable guy in the state of California, the fact that Cal has retained him for this long. But, guys, I didn't see this team being in a position where they weren't competitive against Oregon State necessarily, beat ASU. They did get housed by Washington, but I'm impressed so far with the way they've competed.
Big guy?
C+. I mean that in, like, a very complimentary way. Like, they actually have an offense now. If I would have told you last week that Cal was going to score 40 points, but they lost and didn't cover, you would have never believed me.
Exactly.
But they scored 40 points. So that's rare for what we've seen under Wilcox the last few years. So I like that aspect of things. Sam Jackson, the fifth, will be back next year. No relation to Samuel L. Jackson, at least I don't think so. And he seems like he's a player. So I think because of that, the developments on offense, he's earned probably another year as the head coach.
They'll split the difference, go B minus. Let's go next. Stanford at Colorado this weekend. Colorado laying 11. I will start with Colorado. Is there any way you go A plus A? I mean, this was a team. Their win total was set at 3.5. They're 4-2. They've taken over the college football landscape. 4-2 on Colorado. The number this weekend hosting Stanford is 11. Them all.
Yeah, real quick on Colorado. One thing I've come to realize in America, we've got a lot of people that are just haters and losers. I mean, you could sit there and say you don't like Deion Sanders, but the fact that they've turned this program around, a one-win team, their season win total was projected at 3. They've gotten 4 wins. They're probably going to make a bowl game. They're going to win this game against Stanford. And the vitriol that's been there, I get it. You don't have to be a fan of somebody, but you respect what's been accomplished. USC, now they've had a bunch of hiccups along the way. A-plus all the way for Colorado here.
Go ahead, Big
guy. I'm going A. I mean, I don't know how you can hate on anything they've done. Like, they turned over almost an entire roster in Division I football. Yeah. These guys barely know each other, and they're going out there, and they're competitive, and they're winning games. And look, that comeback against USC, it might have been the best half of football in a losing effort for recruiting implications. What people saw, they saw USC had a head start with Lincoln Riley and Caleb Williams, and Colorado said, come here to Boulder, and we'll beat these guys next year. This team is scary.
Speaking of USC, we've got 3 undefeated teams in the Pac-12. Oregon's 5-0, USC 6-0, and Washington is 5-0. We'll get to the other two, but let's go USC. They're at Notre Dame this weekend. Notre Dame's laying 2.5. Amal, we'll start with you. USC is 6-0. What's your grade on USC so far?
Well, C's get degrees too, and I'm going with a C on USC.
That's
here.
That's what I went with.
A for the offense, F for the defense. Alex Grinch is the problem. Maybe Lincoln Riley will see it after the season when he cost himself a national title with one of the greatest college players of all time in Caleb Williams. But, Patrick, outside the first 2 weeks against San Jose State and against Nevada, but remember, the San Jose State Spartans, they had a third down and 22. They run for it against them. I get one play doesn't mean anything, but Cordero was effective in that game. They shut down Stanford. Since that point in time, they were in a fourth quarter game against Arizona State. They hung on for dear life against Colorado. Arizona, as you alluded to earlier with Brooks Austin, should have beaten the Trojans in the LA Coliseum. That can't happen when you've got Marshawn Lloyd, Caleb Williams, Zachariah Branch. You've got players all over that offense. That defense is hot garbage.
Yeah, I gave them a C as well. Have they put together a complete performance outside of Nevada? Nevada stinks.
Yeah.
And I got to whisper this to you two boys, and we can talk about the 2.5 at Notre Dame. Caleb Williams, if you can hear me whispering, kind of stunk on Saturday night.
He was 4-for-13 at one point.
Yeah, he was not. Or 11. Again, a lot of pressure to repeat, but he wasn't great in the game.
So I gave him a B minus because they are still winning the games and that still matters. And Caleb Williams has had a lot of ups and downs, but the numbers are still absurd. He still has 28 total touchdowns and one interception through six games. And I get all that. I think this is a case of a team that only turns it on when it has to. And I'm not saying that in a good way. I'm saying that in a way where it's going to bite them down the road. But thus far, I have to give them a B minus because they are still winning despite a lot of close calls.
Can I just object to that grade? Because there's 25 teams that would be undefeated with their record, with their schedule. And by the way, had they been less than a 19-point favorite in any game this year?
There's no way, right?
No. Colorado on the road was their shortest number at 19 or 19, 20, whatever it was. They were 28 at Arizona State. They were 27, I think, this week against Arizona, somewhere in that range. They were 3 million against Nevada.
6-0, though, still. The points to win.
Listen, Minnesota would be 6-0 with this schedule. Maybe not at Colorado, but at least 5-1.
Why do you play the game, big guy?
You play it to win it. Quote Herm.
Now, do you want to he had a rebuttal against your grade. Do you want to have a rebuttal against the rebuttal?
No, I think mine stands on it, is that it's going to get them down the road. They'll be graded for that when it happens. But as of now, they're doing just enough to win and showing just enough to win. And I noticed that's a trend in college football this year. These teams are only showing enough to get by to some of these lesser opponents.
Did you lay the points? No. Just to win. Took the money line.
Either of you taking the points with USC at Notre Dame quickly on the way out?
I am.
You are? I'm all shocked.
Estime and Notre Dame. Hartman bounces back off of that horrific 5 turnover performance.
We've got Oregon and Washington yet to come. But next, Tim Jenkins, quarterback guru.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Okay, before you make your next bet, be sure to visit VSIN.com to check out the current betting splits data if you want to know where the money and bets are moving for every game. The betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 5 minutes so you can see the changes in all the action. Find out where the public betting is based on the number of tickets and where the money doesn't match the public opinion. You can check out not just today's action, but future events as well. Betting splits are another way. VSIN is here to make you a smarter, better. Check it out over at VSIN.com. Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson. I'm Patrick Maher. This is Sharp Money here on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network. Our quarterback trainer, our guru, Tim Jenkins, joins us now. Of course, the film analysis over at All Things QB on YouTube. Tim Jenkins Elite. Of course, the program at T Jenkins Elite on Twitter. And, you know, we were just discussing as we say hi to Tim, and thanks for joining, Tim. We were talking about potentially Deshaun Watson missing out on his start this weekend, Cleveland hosting San Francisco. You actually tutored who eventually could fill in for him, PJ Walker. So let's hear about PJ if he potentially gets the start against the 49ers. And then let's hear what you think about Brock Purdy, who is awesome on Sunday night.
Yeah, obviously you guys are going to get a completely unbiased view of PJ since I trained him, right? Is that, I mean, listen,
exactly.
I think PJ, I'm going to kind of steer clear of the football stuff because I am obviously biased. What I will say is, like, the dude's story is, like, the kind of guy you want to root for, right? Gets cut, like, a million times from the Colts and goes battles it out in the XFL before The Rock was there, right? He battles it out. Hey, COVID season hits. Kyle's probably on track to be MVP, and then he signs and plays a little bit in Carolina, and then didn't have a great preseason with the Bears. Now he's in Cleveland. So I think, like, the reality is PJ's the kind of kid that can fill in, and I think when you've been through as much as he's been through in the league, like, mental toughness probably isn't something you got to worry about, right? PJ's going to go out there, and he's gonna battle his way through. I think from a matchup perspective, you know, San Fran's the favorite for a reason, right? Those dudes are rolling, and I think they're tough up front. You got Fred Warner. I think it's a tough defense. What I will say, though, is PJ ain't afraid to rip it, right? We've seen that from his time. Like, you're going to get a lot of cover two hole shots. You're going to get a lot of deep posts. So here's what I always say when PJ goes and plays, man. It's exciting. Now, there's some crash and burn times, but there's also some times where, you know, I remember when they signed Cam Newton, they went down there and Carolina goes and beats Arizona. So to me, there's every once in a while where they'll spring up and get you, and this one's the Cardinals that we know now. So,
yeah. No, it'll be exciting. And again, Tim did tutor, of course, and train PJ Walker, who potentially could get the start for the Browns. Now, conversely, Brock Purdy. So the question is he a product of that Shanahan offense? But what are you seeing, obviously, as far as the skill from Purdy?
Purdy's just like, I mean, Purdy to me is exactly who that system needs. And the reason I say that is, I'm going to say this and people are going to get mad at first, but let me explain. He's Jimmy G-ish, right? What I mean by that is he's Jimmy G underneath. He's accurate. He gets the ball out of his hand, but he also is laced with some real aggressiveness under center, which is what Jimmy G was missing in that Super Bowl post, right? That Super Bowl post that I think really haunts his time in San Fran, if we're being honest, from a coaching perspective or in that building. That's what Brock Purdy has. He's hyper-aggressive with the football when the coverage dictates it. Simultaneously, the other 85% of the time, man, he's willing to play within the system, and he's super accurate, which is why you see the completion percentage number. You see all those numbers stack up is because he's willing to play within the system. However, if you get single high coverage, if you give him single high coverage, he's going to be aggressive with you. So I think he's the best of both worlds where you have the accuracy underneath, you have the willingness to play within a system, and then simultaneously, when the coverage dictates it, as a quarterback, we have to hunt with the football. And he's willing to do that, whereas some other guys that we've had in San Francisco with Shanahan weren't willing to do it, and I think that's why they're no longer there.
Great point by you, Tim, there. He was talking about the Emmanuel Sanders play in the Super Bowl where, had they hit it, they would have probably won that game. Want to ask you a little bit. PJ's getting ready for this game against the 49ers. It's unique because of how talented they are. But tell us a little bit about how challenging it is for a quarterback who gets signed September 4th to the practice squad after he gets released by the Bears, comes on the Browns. He's the number three guy. You've got Deshaun and you've got DTR in front of him. And then what's the process like when you're on the practice squad to going to becoming the starter, and how challenging is the ramp up in a week?
Yeah. You set the question up great. Listen, in the NFL nowadays, because of the CBA, and whether it's right or wrong, if you're the number two, you don't get enough reps. That's why we have a quarterback issue. We don't have a quarterback issue because there's not guys that are talented. We have a quarterback issue because we have a lack of reps. Right? We renegotiated this based on the other 21 positions, which I don't have an issue with, right? But we don't want linebackers getting downhill and pounding each other during training camp, right? The whole time. Now, the reality is there's not pass attempts now for a quarterback. So you're looking at a 10-2 rep split in training camp. Then you get to the regular season, and if you're the number two, your reps come from running the other team's offense, right? And that's DTR. So then if you're talking about PJ, your reps are coming from watching both of them. Every once in a while, you get thrown there in a 7-on-7 period, or you're hanging after to get the reps. The reality is PJ's a vet. So he's staying after, right? He's getting a ton of reps during practice when the 1 and 2 is healthy. And this week's ramp up is just about as insane as you could imagine it, right? They're probably giving him as many reps as possible and then hoping that we can get timing. But what you're going to see is you're going to see an alter in game plan. And I don't mean this like, I have insight on the Browns, right? I'm not going to, you know, throw my guy under the bus. But what I mean from when you really watch the tape and you see a backup quarterback or a number three play, you see a ton of non-timing related routes. What is that? Like a curl, right? Heading right back to the quarterback. We're not really concerned with the timing of that. a basic, a cross, right? You see the comebacks you don't see as many of. You don't see as many of the true nine stops. And the reason is because we don't have enough reps on it. So if you have a really great OC who's going to design accordingly, you'll actually see less timing. You'll see less quick game because that's you need reps at that, and you don't have enough. So when you do see these backup quarterbacks play, you got to be alert to the scheme. The scheme's going to change. So when you really dive into the tape, what you'll see is, you know, for every bang eight that Cleveland throws, they're going to start to throw like a true in cut because the bang eight post, that's a timing throw, where the true in cut, it's more of a see it, throw it. So those are the little things that you need to look for on tape, whether it be Cleveland or any time you really see a backup quarterback in the game.
Speaking of tape, you broke down Tua recently. Let's discuss. Carolina's at Miami this Sunday, Tim. Right now it's 13.5 with Miami laying it. I'm curious to get your take overall on the Dolphins, but let's start here with a guy you just broke down on YouTube at All Things QB, and that's Tua. What'd you see from Tua?
Yeah, Tua's kind of been, the Buffalo game wasn't great, and then he followed it up, and last week wasn't great. I'm not going to sit here and act like it's not great if you go NFL average, because then Tua's incredible. But what he was putting on tape weeks 1 through 3, 4 and 5 have been a letdown. His letdown, though, is still really darn good football. His two interceptions, one I think was a lazy play call, and it's about the only one I've ever seen in the history of Mike McDaniel calling plays, right? It's like he fell asleep at the wheel and called stick, and all of a sudden we have a pick six. That was down tight in the red zone too, which then all of a sudden it's an even bigger win, right? And then you had the interception where he couldn't really follow through and his hand gets hit. You know how sometimes you guys watch the NFL and it's like, man, the layout of this game is funky, right? There's a turnover or a muff punter, where you're sitting there and you're just like, man, these guys haven't gotten any possessions. The Dolphins had one possession in the first quarter. It was just kind of a funky game. They still blow the doors off of New York. To me, I think they're going to – to me, I just think they're going to beat the brakes off Carolina. I think Mike McDaniel's going to scheme them up. I don't know how you stop Tyreek with some of these short motion things they do with him, and I just don't see anything really getting better in Carolina, especially you saw that Frank Reich clip where he's like – yeah, it's not really fun to meet with the owner. I'm like, dog, I don't know what you're saying. That's your boss. But I think it's, yeah, Carolina's not in a great spot.
Tim, I want to ask you quickly. We got about a minute left. C.J. Stroud has been unbelievable. Now he faces an elite defense in the Saints. What has just propelled him to be this good out of the block without an interception in his rookie year in 5 games?
They are dialed in scheme-wise. They looked at Ohio State, they transplanted as much as they could, and then everything that they said, this is an NFL staple, we have to have this concept. It is a hyper-aggressive, pure progression, 1-2-3, no matter the coverage, and the dude is playing decisive. So I think that's all scheme-based. I think that coaching staff deserves a lot of credit, especially a former player, you know, a defensive guy down there too. I think they deserve a ton of credit with putting him in a position to be successful.
Somehow got through the segment and didn't ask you about Russell Wilson and the Broncos. Of course, Tim lives out in Colorado. A quarterback trainer, of course, All Things QB on YouTube, at T Jenkins Elite on Twitter. Great as always, Tim. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you so much.
I appreciate you guys.
Thank you.
Okay, appreciate you. And we do appreciate, hey, fellas, maybe we'll get a little sweat going as we say goodbye to Tim. Sonny got out of the top of the second, so that first 5 under is still alive, no?
There's a chance.
It's breathing, but it's on life support.
You're just rolling your eyes.
We're just trying to find next of kin.
We're trying. We got Berkey coming up at the top of the hour. We'll go back to the Pac-12 next here at Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Okay, Sharp Money, and don't forget on DraftKings Sportsbook this season, new customers can bet $5 and pocket $200 in bonus bets instantly. Plus, all customers can get a no-sweat same-game parlay every day. Download the DraftKings app and use the promo code SHARP when you sign up. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. We're back, Sharp Money. We've got Adam Burke coming up in 14 minutes. VSIN's managing editor, of course, plenty to do. Berkey all over with the daily podcast as far as Major League Baseball, the postseason, every single day over at VSIN.com. I'm Amal Shaw. Dustin Sweetelson. I'm Patrick Maher. Okay, boys, update on Houston and Minnesota there. It sounds like Abreu hit one to Saskatchewan over the what's going on right now?
It's still 4-0. By the way, I don't think the ball was hit that short. I mean, this thing was absolutely crushed. But right now we've got Willie Castro at the plate facing an 0-1 count. But the reality of it is, I don't have an updated number, but Christian Javier at one point had 7 out of 21 pitches had swing and misses. And he's added to that number. He has been tremendous as Castro pops out a bunt to Maldonado. We're through 2 complete right now in the Twin Cities, 4-0 Houston.
And you got involved live there, big guy?
Yeah, I took a little shot on the Twinkies plus 2.5. Only I had to lay 111 juice. So if they can just get a couple runs here, we got a chance. We got a fighting chance. If not, I lose 2 bets in one day.
You know, this is the one thing, Patrick, and you know this because you're a big soccer guy. In soccer and baseball, you're right there at that number. There are 2 goals. Last week, Chelsea was playing somebody. I forgot who it was. They scored 2 goals quickly. And then all of a sudden, they just hit a wall the rest of the way. And baseball can kind of be like that sometimes. You can get a ton of runs early on. We mentioned it from the Dodgers game last night. I know you had over 3.5 on the D-backs. And it ekes over with the Gurriel homer in the 6th inning, I believe it was. But, man, so many times it looks like you're on that runway about to take off, and then the flight is canceled.
100%. Well put. Okay, boys, we'll keep you updated as far as the Astros and Twinkies 4-0 heading into the top of the 3rd. So, and by the way, your first 5 still alive. I'm not trying to jinx anything. I'm just saying. You do have a top 25 matchup. We're going Pac-12. Having a little fun, kind of handing out letter grades to the Pac-12 because it's been the conference that matters. And here's a good example. You got a top 25 matchup, UCLA at Oregon State coming up this weekend, Saturday, 5 p.m. 4-1 UCLA, 18th ranked against a 15th ranked Oregon State team that's 5-1. The number right now, Oregon State's laying 4 and a 54.5 on the total. But let's start. Why don't we start with UCLA and a letter grade for the Bruins this year? Come on.
I'm going to go with a B+. You got a young stud and Moore at the quarterback position who I think is going to become a great quarterback in years 2 and 3 for Chip Kelly. This team loses the game. Moore throws a first play pick 6 against Utah. They end up losing that game 14-7. They were right in it. Bruins have a top 10 scoring defense. Really done a nice job so far. A quality under the radar win last weekend at the Rose Bowl. Dominant performance against Cam Ward and Washington State, limiting them to 17 points. And the Bruins, this is the problem with the Pac-12 right now, guys. UCLA, Oregon State, Washington State all sitting with 1 loss, and we don't even talk about them because we talk about Utah, USC, Washington, and Oregon.
I would agree. You said B+.
Yes.
I think I'll probably go A-.
I don't have
UCLA
a problem with
was
that.
They're kind of that team that we didn't talk about when previewing the Pac-12, and their 1 loss is what, against Utah, boys?
By 7.
And you mentioned Dante Moore, who's going to be a stud. And how about a defense that's right there? Maybe total yards are the best in the Pac-12, like kind of an under-the-radar unit. UCLA for Brian Kelly and that defense. I've been really pleasantly surprised with what they put together here in Los Angeles this year. I'll go A- as they head to Oregon State this weekend, big guy.
It's like a not sexy year for this team. It's quote unquote somewhat of a rebuild because of the young quarterback, but they're going to win like 9 games this year. So if you're rebuilding and winning 9 games, that's pretty good. Potentially winning more. Who knows what they do this week? Like last week was one of those situations as a bettor where you need to listen to what the bookmaker's putting out there.
Yes.
Because I bet Wazoo, and none of it made sense. I know it was like that classic ranked team versus an unranked team and on the road and all this. And I was like, no, everything I've seen with my eyeballs says that Wazoo's the better team. Well, the people behind the book were right that time. They nailed it. UCLA was the better team. And this week, it's the opposite end, where UCLA is catching the points at 4.5. I'm inclined to lay it, but I say a grade for UCLA is a B+.
Okay. Next up, you mentioned Wazoo. Well, the 1 loss for the Beavers this year was at Wazoo, Oregon State. Let's get a grade here. They're going to be hosting UCLA, laying 4.5. 10 wins last year. Tremendous year. Now, statistically, both sides of the ball, they're actually better this year, Oregon State. Just the 1 loss. What do you got as far as a grade here, Maul?
I'm going to go A-. And The reason is you lose by 3 points at Washington State. The game wasn't quite as close as the final score indicated, but they were thoroughly dominant against Utah at home. This is a good football team. You look at what Jonathan Smith has done with DJ Uiagalelei getting things turned around. Martinez and Fenwick are a tremendous tandem in the backfield. The offensive line has played very, very well, which we expected coming into the season. But I'm going to go A-. Listen, I don't want to get the perception out there that my class is easy. Everyone's taking it to get an A. But the Pac-12 deserves a lot of A's across the board.
Yeah, I think it's fair. I'm going to go A-. Somewhere in between an A- and B+. Here's the deal with Oregon State, boys. UCLA, then they get their bye. Then they're at Arizona, not easy. But then they at Colorado, obviously not easy. Stanford, and then listen how they finish the year. They host Washington, and they're at Oregon. So
no problem.
The story has yet to be written for a 10-win team from last year. A very good start. They beat UCLA. All of a sudden, Mr. Smith has got this team in a very good spot. Tough schedule to close out.
Wait, are we doing Wazoo or Oregon State?
Oregon State.
Oh, Oregon State. I don't know why I heard Wazoo. Oregon State, yeah. Look, the thing about Oregon State is they're so physical. They're so different than a lot of this league. I guess it's them and Utah. Those are the two physical teams in the league. And DJ's been good, man. DJ's been good. I think Oregon State, for me, is a B+. I think they're a lot more dynamic than I expected them to be, and they're going to be the team. This is the team that messes up the Pac-12 getting to the college football playoff, because I could see them getting better as the season goes on. They will upset one of Washington and Oregon.
Okay, and finally, we got the matchup this weekend.
Yep.
Listen, Oregon and Washington, are either of us not giving A's to these two teams? Both undefeated. I'll set you up on the number, Amal. Oregon's at Washington. Washington's laying 3. Again, we can start with Oregon. I'll give them a straight A here, A+.
I wanted to go with Washington first because I was giving Washington an A.
Sure.
And I'm giving the Ducks an A+. What Dan Lanning has done with this defense and turned it around from that abysmal defense that they had last year. No knock on Washington. It's just that Oregon has just been slightly better defensively for me this year. Both teams are valedictorian level right now in the Pac-12.
Yeah, A+ for both. The defense, the turnaround with Oregon has been tremendous. Explosive offensively. Big guy, what do you got for the Ducks?
Yeah, I got an A- for Oregon. I love them. They're physical, too. They're a little bit different. Not quite as much at the line of scrimmage defensively. It's more like the linebackers, the secondary I like for Oregon a lot. And then offensively, Bo Nix leaves Auburn, and he's a different human being. He's been really good in his career there up in Eugene. I give them an A- for Washington. They're an A+. This team needs to get in the playoff and represent the Pac-12. The refs need to rig things and make that happen because they can hang and go shot for shot with anyone in the country. I trust them on both sides of the ball way more than I trust USC. This team is absolutely loaded. I love watching Washington. I don't think anyone's going to scare them after this week. This week,
I was just
going
to say, is Washington Pac-12's most complete team?
Yes. Yes.
No.
Yes.
I'm going Oregon. I'm going the Ducks.
They can't hang with them offensively.
No, Washington's got a better offense. There's no question about it. You know, I love the comparison Tim Jenkins made last year with Ohio State's receiving core, Adunzie McMillan. These guys are absolute dudes. They're going to be drafted in the first 60 picks of the NFL draft. They've got a great offensive team. Listen, I know it's going to contradict what I just said, Dustin. I'm going to take the Huskies at home on Saturday in Seattle, Lake Washington. Guys, this is the biggest home game UW has had in a long, long time. And this is an underappreciated, undervalued rivalry in that part of the country. You got two top 10 teams, and we could potentially have a rematch in the Pac-12 championship game with these two teams.
If they win
Number
this
one
game,
offense.
I have a question. If they win this game, they go to USC November 4th.
Yep. They're beating the Trojans.
What's the line at USC if they're both unbeaten?
Trojans 3 or 4.
That's a good that is a good question. You said 3 or 4?
Yeah, USC. Publicity, SC, Los
Angeles.
Hook. Yeah.
That makes sense.
I was going to say 3. Yeah, you're probably right, though.
I'll take those points. I'll go money line.
The Sharps will buy it down to 3.
Yeah, absolutely.
Eat up that hook. If
Lincoln Riley is not a better coach than Kalen DeBoer.
Kalen DeBoer is the second best coach in the Pac-12.
Jonathan Smith, number one?
No. Kyle Whittingham.
I knew he was going to say Whittingham. Oregon and Washington. you can argue A plus. They're both just been, and plus they're both of them are very complete.
Yes.
I will lay the three this weekend. That's the best offense yards per game wise and all of FBS football. Washington is sick.
This game
ridiculous.
This game is gonna be like Texas OU. Buckle in for the final 5 minutes. This is gonna be a fantastic football game.
It's gonna be a great game. Can't wait for it. Okay, great job, boys. When we return, Adam Burke, VSIN's managing editor. We've got baseball, we've got football, we've got plenty. Another hour to go.